to me. Oh, oh,
I despise. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to learn about what happens when a mother who is carrying a child has severe depression and how that will impact the child later in life. A very interesting study. But that's just the beginning. We have a lot of information, always from qualified peer-reviewed journals, talking about how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then I'm going to take on the Trump administration and the Republican Party and those Democrats who have supported legislation that would take away our environmental rights. Now, yesterday I mentioned the uniqueness of Ralph Nader's policies that helped protect us, gave us the Environmental Protection Agency, our Clean Water Act, our Clean Air Act. Those have been taken down or diminished in part or whole over the last 50 years. So what can we do about it? First, understand how severe the problem is. Most of the policies that were anti-environment, denying global warming in this administration, have gone under most people's radar. We'll put it right up in front of you. And then we're going to ask you for positive solutions to the problem. And you'll be able to call in our talkback number at 888-874-4888. Also today, I want to give you some insights on what to do about the problem with the bad cops. I post anytime I see something that I consider egregious on my Facebook, which a lot of people read. And by the way, some of the things that you see on there from time to time are not mine. They're posted by trolls and provocateurs overnight with the idea that somehow those are mine. They're not. I eliminate those first thing in the morning. But the other ones, all the good ones about issues around the world, I post those, probably 50 a day. And a lot of upbeat ones showing the best of human nature, showing people helping one another, showing the love that comes from animals. Today, I posted one of the best compilations of showing the man who rescues hundreds and hundreds of orphan kangaroos in Australia. And when you see the love that they express, how they wrap their arms around his neck and give him hugs and kisses, you think, wow. And people are out there shooting him as if these are not sentient beings. They are. So anyhow, if I see that the police or a police officer has done something unique and special, I post that also. But when they do something wrong, I absolutely post it. But we have to keep this in proper perspective. There are hundreds of thousands of police officers in the United States. I've had many who are close friends, and the ones I've known have been decent, ethical, and they would not do the things that we sometimes see some of these men and women who should not be in police uniform and having the power of decisions that could be life and death. So I'm going to say today, why aren't we able to get rid of the bad police? Why? That'll be an audio clip that you'll hear, and if you're watching, you'll see. Also, some of us are very concerned about the depletion of water. We're simply running out of drinkable water. And one of the major problems is we're giving water to Nestle's corporation, the largest food corporation in the world. And the CEO of Nestle says that water's not a human right. Yes, it is. But if Nestle's could bottle air and sell it back to us before we suffocate, it would do it. So we're going to give you a short clip of what is a much longer and detailed investigative report into Nestle's selling water and how they're depleting aquifers so that the people who live in that immediate area won't have access or the amount of water that they need. It's a problem that is under the radar also. Also today, we're going to look at why we're not paying attention to the ozone layer. We should, because it's challenged. And if there's a hole in that ozone layer, if you were to go outside, you couldn't be outside for more than a couple minutes. You get third-degree burns. So let's make understanding the ozone layer and how to protect it a top priority. We'll begin today. And finally today, time permitting, we'll have on a clip about school teachers going back to school, but also how these really special human beings, out of their own pocket, spend money on books and clothing, on food, the necessities that the children in their classroom simply don't possess or the school doesn't have a budget for. Now, when you consider how much we spend on the military-industrial complex and the fake war on terrorism, where we're actually funding terrorists and have been, or terrorist supporters such as Saudi Arabia, which is the biggest terrorist state in the world, it's rather hypocritical. So all the more impressive is it when you see a school teacher out of their own pocket, and they're not being reimbursed for this, helping their students. So this is our kudos to those school teachers in America today. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, and the first study is about children. And it's about maternal depression can alter the stress and immune markers in children. This comes from the Interdisciplinary Center out of Israel. And what they did, they found that when a mother is depressed, when she's carrying a baby, that depression is then imprinted into the immune system and the neurological system of the child. Now, a lot of people have posited this, but this is one of the first times they have absolute proof. Researchers followed 125 children from birth to 10 years, and at 10 years, the mother's and the children's cortisol and the secretion of immunoglobulin was marked and found that these children had very high levels of stress. Even though there was no specific stressors, their body was responding as if it was almost programmed to have stress, and that impacts the immune system. If you want to destroy your immune system, making you far more susceptible to disease, then get stressed and watch how quickly your whole immune system collapses and the diseases, heart attack and stroke, that can follow. So let's put this in perspective. I've had the opportunity in my life to work some and interview and even to befriend some psychologists, Dr. Elaine Kahn at the New York Center for Marital and Sexual Guidance, Dr. Donald Mullen at the Albert Ellis Center, and Dr. Albert Ellis himself, and also the Dr. Lawrence Lashan, probably about 15 psychologists. These just weren't normal clinicians. These were innovators. They were breaking through barriers to find better ways of helping people with the traumas of their life. So they weren't always cursed with holding on to it, knowing about them, but not being able to change. And it was only after Professor Bruce Lipton, who I just filmed last week, and Lipton for a new documentary I'm doing, and Lipton was the first to show this whole new field that is really growing called epigenetics, which means that the influences that we were exposed to early in life, even in the womb, even our mother's and father's early life, their mother's and father's early life, it can go back about 5-6 generations, that is carried in the DNA and passed in the progeny one to the next to the next to the next. And then one day you're up and about and you're not feeling good, or you're feeling exuberant, you feel comfortable in your own skin, or you don't like yourself at all, and you can't figure out why. This is one of the reasons. This study from Israel shows that. Now, that is only showing the problem, that we should be looking epigenetically, in effect reprogramming, so that you understand it is not humanly possible to eliminate, to erase, to expunge any bad memory. It's there for life. The key is not to exchange the energy, not to connect with it. And that is what Professor Henry Grayson and a whole school of the energy exchange psychology that you can do tapping exercises, and I'll be having him on. I just filmed him too, how you can, in effect, break that energy connection. So even though it's there, it's dormant. So therefore, you don't have to overact or under-actualize your life. Next up is something, and I'll be having the guests on so that you can see this in action, see the solutions. Mushrooms are very beneficial for our health in cook form, and mushrooms can help develop an immune reaction to diabetes. This is according to research from Pennsylvania State University. So eating the white button mushrooms, the most common ones you see in the store, can improve the regulation of glucose in the liver. That's according to a study that could pave the way for new diabetes treatments and prevention strategies. So feeding white button mushrooms changed, in this laboratory experience, changed the composition of gut microbes, the microbiota, the good bacteria, to produce more short-chain fatty acids, specifically proportionate from succinate. And that mean that the person had better bacteria and better blood sugar control. Now, of course, you can lightly saute those white mushrooms with garlic, with onion, with shallots, and use it in a stir fry, and that's terrific. So mushrooms for diabetes, mushrooms for elevated blood sugar. Also, to help all of you in the audience who have a child suffering from ADHD or adult suffering from cognitive decline, according to Trinity College, which is in Dublin, breath focus practices help alleviate symptoms of ADHD and cognitive decline. So it helps young people and older people. What do I mean? In lay language, breathing the correct way does more than sustain life. When practiced with meditation, which controls your breathing, it can benefit the body and, according to the Irish researchers, help with ADHD and cognitive decline. And this was according to the neuroscientists from Trinity College. They affirmed that breathing exercises are a much safer alternative for the treatment of ADHD symptoms. Also, having used the breathing by yogis and Buddhists in South Asia to calm and clear the mind since ancient times, the practices have yet to manifest any adverse effects. Now, anytime I've helped someone train for a marathon, over 30,000 people since 1975, the very first thing I explain is half of all athleticism is breathing. Why? Because breathing exercises can help the body remain within a sweet spot where you're breathing correctly and properly and relaxing in your breathing, which eases pressure on the muscles. And enhanced oxygen delivery and relaxing and breathing deep allows more of the blood to flow into the tissues and more energy through adenosine triphosphate to be released. Also, good breathing allows the release of endorphins, E-N-D-O-R-P-H-I-N-S, and that's the happy hormones. So you feel better. Also, it lowers blood pressure and relaxes the blood vessels so they dilate, allowing more blood. Now, for those of you who've asked me about clay, the good news is that clay fights MRSA and other superbugs and wounds. That's according to Arizona State University and the Mayo Clinic. The use of mud or wet clay as a topical skin treatment or a poultice is a common practice in many cultures. In fact, the concept of using mud as a medicine goes back to the earliest times. Now, the Mayo Clinic and Arizona State University researchers found that one type of clay, Oregon blue clay, can help with the disease-causing bacteria in wounds, and their findings are published in the International Journal of Microbiology. So, now you have a way of having some Oregon blue clay that doesn't go bad, and you can keep it, and if you ever have a scratch, a cut, it can destroy E. coli and Staphylococcus aureus, including the serious MRSA, Staphylococcus aureus, which kills people thousands a year in the United States. For those of you who have not been exercising and are getting older, please start. According to the University of Michigan, people with low muscle strength are more likely to die prematurely. Quite simply, individuals with weaker muscles do not typically live as long as their stronger peers. That's according to the latest. And they're saying that maintaining muscle strength throughout life, and especially in later years, is extremely important for longevity and aging independently. And this was done at the School of Health at the university. So my suggestion is that you use resistant exercise, a rowing machine, a bike in the hardest gear. A VersaClimber is the best of the best. I mean, there is no exercise equipment you can buy that I'm aware of. And I have everything in my own personal gym at my home. That VersaClimber does it like nothing else. You get both cardio and you get muscular resistance. But whatever you have to do, push-ups, do it every day. For those of you who have diabetes, a University of California Los Angeles study shows that the antioxidants in walnuts cut the risk of diabetes by 50%, cutting it in half. Moreover, almonds are important too. They had been reigning supreme, but now it's walnuts. But every type of nut, walnut, offers a bevy of nutritional benefits, and walnuts are gaining recognition for their potential to slash the risk of type 2 diabetes. They've got good oils, good antioxidants, and they also are good for every cell in your body. So there was a recent study of 34,000 people found that doubling their consumption of walnuts can cut the risk of type 2 diabetes by 50%. That is terrific. So, and let's get more walnuts into our system. Or if you can't get the nuts, then have the nut butters. And all a nut butter is the nuts that have been ground up into what looks like a paste, like a peanut butter. There's nothing added, nothing taken away, just makes it more easily digestible and more bioavailable. So I definitely suggest a handful of nuts each day. Also, an important study on being too intelligent and easygoing can harm the chances of finding love. This is according to University of Western Australia. And I just, you know, when you're reading these studies, and one just kind of pops out at you, because intelligence and easygoingness are commonly regarded as attractive qualities in a prospective mate. But is there a point at which elevated levels of these characteristics start to become less attractive? And the answer appears to be yes, according to new research carried out by the University of Western Australia and published in the British Journal of Psychology. They found that there was a statistically significant reduction in rated attractiveness for when a person is at the high end of intelligence and the high end of easygoingness. And why? Because when you're highly intelligent, some people are intimidated by that. But how often is it that a highly intelligent person is looking at the other people in their life as if it doesn't matter how intelligent you are? You're a human being. Find things you can share. If it were only that simple. The reality is that sometimes people assume that because they're intelligent, everyone else in their life should be equally intelligent. Or if they're easygoing, everyone should be easygoing. And therefore, the first time someone commits to the human frailties of expressing problems or the drama, that is not good. So the takeaway message is, if you're highly intelligent, easygoing, be very understanding of people who are not. They're no less than you. And millions of pregnancies were found to have DDT. That's according to Columbia University. A study of more than 1 million pregnancies report that elevated levels of the metabolite of the banned in 1972 DDT in the blood of pregnant women are linked to increased risk of autism in children. That's according to the investigators at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health and Department of Psychiatry, published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. I remember the time because we all had such respect for Rachel Carson, who wrote the seminal book that would guide all of us towards understanding the role of pesticides and human health. Up to that point, you would actually see trucks come around communities and just vaporize everybody with this DDT. Oh, people go out there and mothers would send their children out there in their bathing suits just to get covered with this fog machine of DDT. Little did we know, was she told us what would happen, and she was right. So now it's showing up in the blood all these generations later. From the University of Warwick, bad thoughts connect lousy sleep and depression. New research identifies the neural link between depression and sleep problems. The researchers found functional connectivity between the areas of the brain associated with short-term memory, the self, and negative emotions, which cause sufferers to dwell on bad thoughts and lead to a poor quality of sleep. They looked at 10,000 people, and they examined the neural mechanisms underlying the relationship between depression and quality of sleep. Okay, so that's the problem. Meaning, in just lay language, if you've got some bad ideas, if you're focused, by the way, and that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry. So if you've got some bad ideas and you're about to go to sleep, the brain won't turn off. It's still trying to grapple with what to do. People don't like to feel vulnerable. People don't like to be in a situation where the circumstances or people in their life have created a dynamic that they can't handle. So here's a simple suggestion for you to help you get a better night's sleep, build your immune system, and wake up rested. I came to this decision about 30 years ago when I had a group of people in a workshop. I was doing a health support group, a study group, all of whom had chronic insomnia of all ages. When I ruled out everything else, eating before going to bed, which raises your anabolic level, meaning like it revs up your engine, so your body's not going to go to sleep. It has to digest this food, and it's going to create energy. Or light in a room, or sound, the obvious. I came to a decision that we're not processing our angst. So I simply did this. I asked everyone to write down on a sheet of paper, just as they were ready to go to sleep, everything that was bothering them, but number it, like the number one thing that's really bothering you that you're going to deal with tomorrow, and write it out. Tomorrow I'm going to speak with someone because I was not happy of how I was spoken to. They're showing disrespect, and it's kept in my craw all day, and it's bothering me. I need to express myself. I'm no one's doormat. Okay, number one. Number two, why is it that I do things for other people and they don't even say thank you? They're just taking me for granted, my generosity and kindness for granted. That bothers me. My question is, should I do anything more for that person, or should I let them know that I'm not happy with the fact that I can do something for them and they can't say thank you? Number two, and go right down a page until everything that you're really concerned about, things that are bothering you, you've written out. Now go down and read each one and set it down. And here's what I found. You're then disassociating the anxiety that you're feeling from your sleep. You're not conflating them. And as a result, when that pillow is met by the head resting on it, you go right to sleep. That's been my experience, and that was the experience of over 200 people in that particular health support group. So I just wanted to share that with you. And finally, a new study out of the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, 2 sodas a day raise your cancer risk level. That's correct. This is one more reason to consider cutting back or eliminating, ideally, drinking of these sugary drinks, especially on a daily basis, because it increases the link to gallbladder cancer. They studied 70,000 adults, and they found that it's the sweetened beverages that increase the tumors in the gallbladder. So, in fact, you have a 79% higher risk of having biliary tract cancer, according to the study, which was published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. Why not just have some delicious, fresh-made fruit juice? Juice of your choice. Have you ever had a pineapple juice with lemon in it? It's delicious. Watermelon juice with lime? It's delicious. No sugars added. Flooding the body with all forms of wonderful phytochemicals. That's what you should use. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to challenge Donald Trump and his administration and the people who do not support the environment. And yet last night in a lecture he was giving, he talked about how he wants clean water and he wants clean air. Yeah, Donald, and you probably want a crew cup, but I don't think you're going to get one. So for you and everyone else in that little crazy house that you all live in that swamp that you all swim in, we're going to offer a challenge to you. A challenge to the Republicans, the Donald Trump, and those who believe that we're doing just fine with the environment. No, we're not. Back in a moment to explain why. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. It's important not to listen to what someone says, but rather see what they do. You can, on the one hand, as Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, support the coal industry, support the nuclear industry, support offshore drilling, support more hydrofracking, and say that you're pro-environmental. It's not going to happen. This is a message for Al Gore as well. I believe that Al Gore is completely sincere in wanting to slow down global warming. And I believe he's done some, at least two, fairly good films. But as a documentarian, I also watch a film to see what someone excluded or left out. On the one hand, if you say you want to do something important to slow down global warming, then you, as a highly respected member of the corporate liberal community, then you should become a vegan and suggest and advocate everyone else become a vegan, because building more unique solar systems is not the answer. Stopping at the cause is. And therefore, going from being a meat eater, in fact, your home down there, raised cattle. So why not show the 18% reduction in global warming of gases, methane, that we would save? In fact, let me put it another way. If we gave up all meat in our diet, that would be a greater impact on reducing global warming than if we stopped driving cars, planes, trains, buses, and ships. That's how significant it is. But that's a hypocrisy. People say, with their own charismatic and unique way, they're for the environment. Well, you're for the environment if you actually do something for the environment. So I'm going to share with you now Donald Trump's record, because I've already expressed my concerns about the other liberal, corporate, oligarchical Democrats. Donald Trump stated climate change is a hoax created by the Chinese. Donald Trump, both Clinton records would seem impeccable compared to Trump, and he swapped scientists throughout his agency for sycophants. Scott Pruitt at the EPA, he's a climate change denier. Trump gutted the EPA with a 31% decrease in scientists. Albert Kelly, the senior EPA advisor, a banker who has been busted for financial malfeasance with no experience in the environment, and is currently supporting a bill in Congress by Matt Gaetz that would terminate the EPA. And by the way, it was Ralph Nader who caused the EPA to be created. Rick Perry, he's the energy director, and he's the global ambassador for America Oil and Gas. Well, that's exactly what's causing global warming. And he's the head of an agency that's supposed to stop it. Also, Trump's whitewashes references to climate change, and it's no longer in the nation's major strategic plan. It's no longer listed as a national security threat. And federal agencies with climate change references have been censored. It was under Trump that the first legislation to revoke Dodd-Frank requiring oil, gas, and mining companies to disclose payments to foreign governments. And the second legislation approved the Keystone and Dakota Access pipelines. Now, that was under, remember, Obama and Clinton both were pro-Keystone, and also the dismantling of Obama's Clean Power Plan, the only legislation that would enable the U.S. to meet the Paris Agreement levels. But that was voluntary. So the Paris peace was voluntary, and unless it's mandatory, it's not going to make a difference. And also Trump threatens to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, which he did if he was elected, and except for the clause that no country can back out until 2020. He ended NASA's carbon monitoring system. The President of the United States, Donald Trump, in April started to roll back and cut auto emission standards. And Trump has said that cars without combustible engines is a fairy tale. Boy, is he wrong. He loosened restrictions on toxic air pollution. He reversed Obama's ban on drilling in seas of northern Alaska, now open for drilling. He also had the largest auction of federal waters, 77 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico, for leasing to oil companies. He lifted Obama's moratorium on new coal leases on federal lands, and that's a 40% of the nation's coal from federal lands, and he called it beautiful, clean coal. He did it again last night, but there's nothing beautiful about coal. And if you think that it's beautiful, why don't you talk with the miners in the state where I grew up, West Virginia, at Black Lung? He discontinued the federal program to screen mental health among coal workers. So on the one hand, he's sitting there last night talking with coal miners in West Virginia, this just last night, and he's taken away the very things that would protect them. He also deregulated methane gas leaks from fracking, and also legislation in place to subsidize coal again. That'll cost $10 billion every year. That's a free giveaway to the coal industry. Now, granted, I don't want to see unemployed coal miners. I know what they've gone through. In fact, in just 3 weeks from now, I'll be on the road again filming two films simultaneously, one on the environment, one on poverty. And in West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, and Pennsylvania, the two are actually commingled because the environmental degradation has caused gross poverty. So how is it that you can reconcile that you're telling people who've been unemployed, some for a couple decades, that you're going to bring back coal instead of doing the right thing with that $10 billion and bring back jobs based upon industries that are sustainable? Why not start manufacturing solar panels in West Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee? Why not bring back hydroponic houses, large ones that can grow millions of heads of lettuce and healthily without pesticides, without GMOs? They're where the local community prospers by having employment at a living wage, and then they also create food for the local community. And based upon how it works, local people who are poor could have healthy, organic food. At least that's good. And then they could have that food to sell, have collectives, where everyone who works there shares in the profits. Because remember, nothing else is as important as food and water to stay alive. And the breadbasket of America, including West Texas, most of California, Kansas, Idaho, Indiana, Illinois, and Colorado, and South Dakota, those are where a lot of our grains are grown, and a lot of our other plants, they're dying. The weather's just destroying them, heating up the soil so that it can't germinate, and then flooding the soil with rain, torrential rain, so it rots. So if you have hydroponics, you have a step out on everyone else. That's where you should be putting the money, but that's not what he sees. Also, Trump rescinded the rule of the Department of Interior to keep plastic water bottles out of the federal parks and to permit the use of lead ammunition in hunting again on federal lands, and for sinkers for fish, which pollute the water. He also, President Trump, greenlight a dangerous pesticide, chlorpyrifos, banned for household use in 2000, now being used 140 times over EPA-safe levels for fruits and vegetables. But you wouldn't know that because it's not labeled. He also is rolling back the Endangered Species Act. He signed an executive order to revoke federal flood risk standards that refer to sea level rises predicted by climate change. So people living near the water, your insurance is not going to be covering you. Now, I live 12 miles from the water on an animal preserve, and I can tell you that it's bad. Insurance companies are not doing anything. And he's also canceling Obama's plan to help protect the oceans. Look at the green algae. Look at the cause. Rick Scott is the cause of that, the governor of Florida, because he's aligned himself with the sugar producers down there. So that's some of what's wrong on the environmental level with the people in Congress. So how dare they suggest that they want clean water and clean soil and clean food, clean air, when everything they actually support promotes pollution? And yet there's not a single progressive in this entire administration, nor was there in Obama, nor was there in Clinton, nor was there in Bush. You'd have to go way back to find progressives. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We have Professor Ellen Brown on the phone right now from Los Angeles. She's an economist, an attorney, founder of the Public Banking Institute, a nonprofit economic venture to develop viable, sustainable solutions to banking in the United States. She has authored a book, The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity, and introduces a safe, soluble public banking alternative to the credit-based system of the current banking system. She also does a program every week. It's Our Money, every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on the Progressive Radio Network. Her website is ellenbrown.com. Nice to have you with us, Ellen.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Nice to talk to you. I should say I'm not really a professor.
Okay.
So I do a lot of professing.
Ellen, I don't think it's... I don't think most people understand the bail-ins that we are faced with and how they work. But we first have to establish that when banks fail, like Goldman Sachs got over $800 billion, Citigroup got over $2.2 trillion in bailouts, they all got huge amounts of money. And so we were told that they would learn something. We would correct our banking system. We could even reestablish the Glass-Steagall Act that Clinton eviscerated. None of that has happened. To the contrary, today the banking system is more precarious in its position than ever before, and especially with the fractionalized banking system we now have. So take us through quickly what the problems are today, what would likely be the outcome if you have your money in a major bank, and where can we put our money so it won't be absorbed by that bank-in rule that Obama passed, and where our money at least could work for us and not against us.
Right. Well, the recent rollback of the Dodd-Frank Act changed the limit of systemically, what are called systemically important or systemically risky banks, to $250 billion in assets. So if you have your money in one of those bigger banks, you could be subject to a bail-in. If that was the how the Dodd-Frank Act changed the bailout the bailout program that we did in 2008-2009, under a bail-in, it's the creditors who get the hit, and the creditors include the depositors. That legally, when you put your money in the bank, it becomes the money of the bank, and you are just a creditor. You are just a lender to the bank, and that's why they give you like 0.001% interest or something. They can say, see, you're getting interest, you're a creditor. Now, theoretically, you're covered by FDIC insurance up to $250,000. So the only way in which that coverage could get wiped out would be if those big banks are also also the big derivative banks, and the derivative players go first in a bankruptcy. So arguably, they could wipe out all the assets of the bank, and there would just be nothing for the FDIC to get. So that your riskiest option is to have your money in one of those giant banks.
Hold on one second. Let's just put this in perspective. Morgan Stanley, Chase, Citibank, Capital One Bank, these are the big banks, and they all collectively, the top five banks, I understand, have over $66 trillion in derivative positions as we speak right now, possibly even more since last time I checked. So not only would every consumer in those banks get wiped out, but there wouldn't be enough money in the Federal Reserve for the FDIC, which I believe it has a credit line over $450 or more or less billion dollars. That's a drop in the bucket. That's not even 5% of what the loss would be. It could literally destroy our entire financial system and make the dollar functionally worthless in a world already precariously close to the abyss. Is that correct or not?
Right. So you would have to go over, I think it's $500 billion for that the FDIC has a credit line with the Federal Reserve. But the FDIC itself only currently has $93 billion in it, and it's insuring $7 trillion in deposits. So obviously it doesn't have nearly enough money to insure all its deposits. The presumption is that that amount wouldn't get hit, but that is certainly a theoretical possibility. You could picture many pundits are saying that the next crisis is going to be worse than the last. Like you say, the big banks are bigger and they are gambling more than they were. The biggest risk on the horizon at the moment is considered to be Deutsche Bank, but they have derivative. The counterparties to their derivative bets are big banks all over the world. So if they go down, the banks that are counterparties in these over-the-counter derivatives, which are private agreements, nobody even knows exactly who's got what where. If those go down, they could take down, like Chase, another big derivative bank, or their big derivative
counterparties. The whole system collapses, Ellen. It collapses. Now, what can we do that's positive? And by the way, for all of our syndicated stations, we're going to go right up to the end of the hour because I want Ellen to give us the solutions now. You know the problem. The banking system on Wall Street's out of control, pure unmitigated greed. So we can't trust the system. We can't trust the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the banks. There's no integrity there at all. What can we do? Who can we trust? Where can we see that our money is properly placed?
Well, if you put your money into a local community bank or a credit union, it's probably safe. That they now have less regulation than they did due to this rollback, so they're a little stronger than they were. But ideally, you know, I'm chairman of the Public Banking Institute, and we think we, the people, need to own at least some of the banks. In other words, our cities should own their own banks, our states should own their own banks, and ideally the federal government should be a federal bank, actually owned by the people rather than by private banks. Right now it's composed of 12 branches, all of which are 100% owned by the banks in their districts. So we think that is the ultimate solution.
But we're not asking for ultimates today, Ellen.
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
I
understand. That's the future. I'm talking about right now, what would be the best place to put our money where we're least likely to lose it?
I would say a credit union or a community bank. But you do want to, there are websites where you can find out how stable those banks are. The risk, of course, is that they are small, and many of those banks went bankrupt during after 2008. But at least you would be covered by FDIC insurance. The one risk there is that those banks tend to put their money in overnight sweeps in the big banks. So they make a little interest by lending the money overnight, which the big banks use to balance their books overnight because that's the only time they have to balance. And then they give the money back the next day. But you know if they go bankrupt, they'll probably go bankrupt overnight. So you can call your bank and find out if they do overnight sweeps. And if they do, say you'd like to opt out of that. I know I opted out. I have an account at Ameritrade, but anyway, it's a brokerage account. That's another thing. If you have your money in a brokerage account, don't make it be a brokerage account that's attached to a bank. Like Merrill Lynch has a is a broker, so which is attached to Bank of America. So you want it to be like an independent broker. Mine was Scottrade, which became Ameritrade, which is not associated with any bank. But they did do overnight sweeps, and so I called and I said, can I opt out of that? And they said, yes, you can. So you might do that. You know, look into your bank, find out how stable they are, where they're rated in one of these bank rating websites, and make sure that they don't do overnight sweeps into the big banks that might be at risk.
Good. That's good information. Thank you. Also, I believe we should be putting a part of our money into silver. Like dimes and gold and dollars.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Diversify. You don't want to keep more money in the bank than you actually need for your.
And never carry gold or silver certificates. Get the actual hard metal and hide it, and not in a bank. Ellen, thank you very much. I appreciate giving us your insights.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
Check the rating agencies. See what they're saying. Which are the best and most solid of the credit unions and small banks, and that's one place she's suggesting your money would be more safe. I want to give you some insights on what to do about the problem with the bad cops.
Police officers. They're public officials with the power to use force against civilians. We'd like to believe that when cops cross the line, there's a powerful system that polices the police. Now, we're all familiar with those dramatic scenes when a cop gets held accountable for his actions.
I'm going to need you to hand in your badge and gun.
All right, fine, you can have my badge and gun, but we're doing it in your office so I can slam them down on your desk and yell out, "The system stinks!"
But in reality, we can recount so few examples of an officer actually being held accountable for wrongdoing. Why? Because it's extremely difficult to even investigate officers for misconduct. Let's talk about that. I'm Dorian McKesson, and this is Truth Be Told. Complaints against the police are routinely ignored. That's a conclusion Reuters reached last year when reviewing complaints from 15 cities. They found that very few were sustained by police internal review boards. In Tacoma, Washington, for instance, during the 12 months Reuters investigated, only 10% of complaints weren't dismissed. So why do so many of these complaints get tossed? Well, it turns out someone is protecting officers from accountability, the police unions. Like any union, police unions serve their members. They negotiate fair pay and workplace protections. And when an incident arises, they're called upon to help their membership, the cops they represent. But unlike a lot of other organized labor groups, police unions have managed to codify strong protections for cops into law at the expense of public safety. In these 14 states, police have their own Bill of Rights. Police union contracts also include strong protections for their officers. In these 81 cities, those contracts include extremely specific language aimed at protecting cops if they find themselves being investigated. Some of these protections might well surprise you, or maybe infuriate you, but they go a long way toward explaining why it seems so rare that cops are held accountable for wrongdoing. In these cities and states, an officer accused of improper behavior is allowed a cooling off period. This means the officer has time between when they are accused of misconduct and when they can be interrogated by investigators. That window of time shielding a cop from an investigator can be 24 hours, as it is in Sacramento, or can be up to 30 days, as it is in Louisiana. Normal citizens who are accused of crimes aren't given a window of time to collect themselves or get their story straight. There's no cooling off here for you or me. After all, the first 48 hours are said to be crucial to any criminal investigation. The cops know that. There's even a show glorifying that idea. Once a police officer is finally interrogated, they've got protections there too. In these cities, in this state, officers are allowed to review all evidence against them before interrogation. And in 17 cities in 3 states, officers are even given the names of the people who file complaints before they can be interrogated. Now combined, these clauses effectively mean that anonymous complaints can't be made against an officer. Say you see something illegal taking place and an officer is done and you want to report it. Well, they'll immediately know who you are and will know the nature of the allegation before they can even be asked any question. Now, if you or I are suspected of breaking a law, the police will just start asking us questions and we can request a lawyer to be present. But why do the police have protections that the public doesn't? Shouldn't we hold public servants to a higher bar? Even if an investigation does continue after all these rules around interrogations, how is that cop disciplined? Well, guess what? The unions have rules to address that. There's sometimes odd specifics about the way an officer can be held accountable. For instance, Portland's police union contract states, if the city has a reason to reprimand or discipline an officer, it shall be done in a manner that is least likely to embarrass the officer before other officers or the public. It literally says that. And there's also widespread practice of routinely erasing police records of misconduct. In these cities and states, police departments erase disciplinary records after a set amount of years, sometimes as early as 1 year. The point is, police officers get special treatment. How does that make sense? Now here's why this matters. If the cops aren't being held accountable, how can they hold communities accountable? Recent polling shows that only 30% of Black people and 45% of Latinos have confidence in the police. This distrust isn't good for law enforcement or the public. The police work for every community in America. They work for us. And we have a say in how they do their jobs and what rules apply when they cross the line. Police contracts and the laws that protect cops in your community are public. And the contracts are routinely renegotiated. When they are, the police unions in your community are going to be a strong voice in those negotiations. But they don't have to be the only voice. You can work with your local officials to be at the table too.
I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for watching and listening. We look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And by the way, the artwork behind me, that's my friend Peter Max. I'll tell you some of the stories of Peter and I that go way back since we both started our career about the same time. We've been friends ever since. Have a nice day, everyone.